Welcome to Blackened and Burnout. My name is Renee Dillard.
And I'm Alicia Woodson.
And we're just going to have a quick dialogue because we are so, I'm really irritated.
Yeah, so. I'm always irritated. It's fine. Not just about discipline disparities and exclusionary discipline, mm-hmm. but just like in life in general.
In general, all the time. Okay, so I'll go ahead and ask you something.
Sure.
All right, so my first question for you, Alicia. So can you tell me a little bit about what drove you to this practicum umbrella topic and idea?
Yes. So, and this will be in my portfolio, I think, in more depth since we don't have a lot of time today to talk about it. But I think the most important thing is, well, it's two parts. It's one, my own issues with discipline when I was growing up in public schools, and then two, like when I became a teacher with Teach for America and when I taught my first primarily Black class and the ways that I saw the discipline that I was given reflected upon them, and the ways that I saw myself really like contributing to the oppression against my students, in that I was allowing them to be disciplined in ways that were exclusionary and that were suspensions, not expulsions, but definitely suspensions. I had kids out multiple times per year. And a lot of that was my fault because I was not communicating well with them and I wasn't understanding them despite being the same background.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting about that. When I was teaching in, again, at a primarily African-American low-income school, a lot of times white teachers would bring children to me and say, I don't know what to do with him. Can you handle it? What do you think about that?
Oh, I experienced the same thing, specifically in my charter school, because there was more... Well, actually, it was a 50-50 split of Black staff in my charter school, and then I would say it was more diverse in my public school. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was the same thing. Kids from different grades were coming, like kindergartners were walking up the stairs for me to discipline them, for me to sit them in the corner, just because I was able to cultivate relationships with them once I checked my own privilege and my own bias and the way that I was feeding into this oppression. I felt like I was able to make better relationships with these kids and with our students, and that's why I was able to get through to them better than their teachers were, which I think is like the main problem, right? It's all communication breakdown, and it's all like checking yourself, being humble versus just assuming that it's the child's fault. Mm-hmm. But what about you? Why did you choose your portfolio topic, and what is your topic?
I'm looking at something that's really nuanced, I think. So my experience this summer, I worked at a professional education organization. So it wasn't a school, but it's an organization that has a lot of pull and influence with schools. We're in and out of schools. So you can kind of put it in the same category as like a nonprofit or maybe a for-profit educational organization like Nashville Public Education Foundation. So I had a really interesting experience where I started to think about looking beyond diversity in the teaching profession and looking at diversity and representation in all of those kind of peripheral organizations that have push and pull in schools or push into schools. Mm-hmm. So Nashville, there's a lot of like having people come in and serve as mentors for students. So there's tons of like nonprofit organizations that offer these partnerships with Nashville schools. And I started to think about, okay, well, not only does teaching staff need to be diverse, but also the boards of these organizations, the admin of these organizations, the employees, right? Nashville is such an interesting city because there's over 100 languages spoken in Nashville schools, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at the makeup of a lot of really prominent nonprofit organizations, it's mostly Caucasian people.
You can say white people, that's fine. It's mostly white people.
It's just white. It's a lot of really white people.
Yeah. So that's really interesting, actually. But my cousin just was given a role as the professional development person at her Christian private school in Florida, which is primarily, I think it's primarily the student body is mixed, but the staff is white. Mm-hmm. She's the only person of color and one of two women on the leadership team, which are all like older white men who have like attended the school, and they've had like a lot of issues with like diversity and like racial discrimination in the school. So they gave her that position because they're like, hey, like fix this. And she's like, I can't fix like all of this. Yeah. But at the same time, she was like, I felt like I had to take the job because one, like if I'm not going to do it, like nobody's going to do it. And then also like I'm the only person of color on the leadership team. And she said that from going from the classroom to that team, like students look at her now and they're like, wow, like I can be like you one day. Right. And she was like, that's the first time I ever felt that way. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool, even though they're basically asking her to fix all of their racial issues.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you work at an education policy-focused organization in the city. What kind of diversity do you see there?
Me and my boss. I mean, it's like half, probably a little bit more than half women, but they're all white. At least, like, they could pass as white. And then my boss and I are the only two brown women. There's no black or brown males.
It's really interesting.
But then we sit there and advocate for, you know, black and brown males and females in the classroom.
Diversity is huge in Nashville right now. It's like a buzzword.
Oh, yeah.
They're not really doing anything.
Right. And that's, like, why I think representation is interesting as well, because I'm like, which I think there is a difference between representation and diversity, in that, like, I've seen representatives of my race or my gender, but if they're not trained or if they're given, like, impossible tasks like my cousin, then they seem like they fall short of other people's expectations, and then it's like, okay, well, you're there, but you're not being effective, and then you're just feeding into this stereotype that's put on you.
Yeah. Yeah. They talk a lot about pipeline, but let's circle back to that. I have a question for you. So have you, last year, you and I went to a lunch with Dr. Monique.
Yeah.
Morse. Yes. Yeah. And so she's written tons of books, and I just finished Push Out, and I know that the university is doing a book club with Push Out, that's pretty cool. It's really interesting, and you get a free book. You get, like, a copy of the book for free. So, there's been so much rhetoric about the criminalization of black boys in schools. We're always talking about the demonization of black boys, particularly at the elementary level. Teachers just, we don't know what to do. But this book really looks at the criminalization of black girls and how that reverberates and has repercussions in communities. Mm-hmm. So thinking about that, does that kind of lend itself to what you're looking at in your practicum? Are you kind of, like, examining those issues?
I will say that I'm primarily focusing on black and brown males. I do completely agree that black and brown females, specifically black females, are obviously they're in the same bucket and they're dealing with the same issues.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, too, there's research to show that white female teachers will, I don't think this is the right word, but it's basically like they'll masculate, especially like dark-skinned black girls, and they'll treat them like little boys. Yeah. And so I think that's a link too that is important to look at. It's like, why do you not see this little girl as a little girl, and why do you associate her with her black brother counterpart, you know?
Right.
And so I do think that it's definitely an issue. It's just like, but they are two different issues, even though they're the same category. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a dangerous like monolith to try and to connect them too much.
Yeah.
Because what's going to work in fixing, you know, teacher communication and partnerships and relationships with black boys is not going to be the same thing with black girls. Because, you know, they think we have attitude, like we, you know, suck our teeth and
so abrasive.
Yeah. And X, Y, and Z. And then a lot of times with black boys, they're just afraid of them, no matter what their age. So black girls get masculated and black boys get their age. It doesn't matter. They could be 6, but they're treated like they're 18. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very, very strange.
I mean, I think about a lot of times that white people just assume that little colored kids are so hard.
Yeah.
That everything is so tough and they're just so abrasive and so, I don't know if the word I want to use is like mature for their age, but
it's like gritty. That, and I think that word, especially in the organization that I was a part of that got me into teaching, I think that they use that word a lot, grit and resilience. And I think those are great words, but those are not words to be celebrated when you're talking about a child who doesn't have food to go home to. And, oh, but you're gritty, so you can score really high on your Tennessee Ready scores because you don't eat at night. You can't really associate that, you know? And it's really, like, I hate the rhetoric around that, and I don't think that it's right. And I think that we use that to justify, like, why we can treat them like those are high expectations, but it's really not. I guess so, since you're kind of talking about like root causes of issues with disciplining students, what are like the root causes and for why there's a lack of representation, do you think?
So white people are always talking about there being some kind of issue with pipeline, right? That there's not enough black and brown people matriculating through university, going on to graduate school, and so we just don't have enough people to pull from. But I think, like, that kind of traces all the way back to elementary school.
A lack of opportunities
and a lack of access and treating children like they will never achieve some kind of level, and so we're not even going to try. I think that there are tons of people. And I mean, we're in the pipeline, you know, but like, then we end up in positions where we can't grow and we can't flourish and we're stifled before we get to that point to, you know, to serve on a board of a pencil foundation or to,
or you're looked over like for way later in your life.
Yeah.
So it's like stick it out for 30 years when someone else only has to stick it out for 5. I've seen that with my mom a lot. My mom's in a STEM field. She's an aerospace designer. And it's taken her, 30 years now to finally get to the point where they're mentoring her to be the head manager.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, this lady has done
it.
Right, exactly. And if she, especially if she was a white male, it's 3 years tops, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I always tell her, like, you have so much power in that, and you've got to accept these roles, and you've got to go to the next level because of representation. And because I know that my mom is the substance and the content behind it. But yeah, that's a really interesting point. I do think that that's like a huge issue, is it starts all the way back in K-12 schools.
Yeah. And I think with representation, it's important that there has to be and intentionality with engagement. Engagement is not just having people in the room so you can check off some kind of box.
Yeah.
Engagement is involving people in the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are organizations in Nashville that are intentionally trying to put diverse people in really good, productive positions.
Mm-hmm.
But most of what I'm seeing in the city is that they're using diversity as something, it's a buzzword. They're not actually... there's no intentionality behind it. The district just got a $35,000 diversity planning initiative grant. $35,000 doesn't really give them the capacity to promote diversity. $35,000 doesn't get them to every HBCU in the nation to recruit diverse teachers. And Nashville already has a problem. They start the school year 120 teachers short. And, you know, coming from my district, I know that there were so many capable paraprofessionals of color that weren't being groomed to become teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole pool of people
who are in the pipeline. But we're not investing in them.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I definitely agree with it. Diversity being like a guise for a lot of organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that, too, is like white people have to do the work. So, like, you can't just bring in diverse people and assume that they're going to change the way that you think and change the environment and whatever, because that's just surface level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you also have to change, like, the way that you think, the way that you think about those people, or you're not going to want to invest in them. You're not going to want to take time and partner with them in different projects. Yeah. Like, I think that it's a white and a people of color thing.
Yeah.
And also, like, looking at representation in different ways. Like, for example... At our nonprofit, you know, in a rural community, are looking at diversity in different ways. So in a rural community, they're not going to have as many like English learners, for example, but they're recruiting like males, for different things. And by English learners, I'm talking about like EPPs recruiting students who were once English language learners who are now T1s through T4s who could become teachers, but they have like a 1% population of ELs. but there's 50% of the population male. So that's diversity too, because in the teaching field, all of us are women for the most part.
Yeah. So my last question for you would be, is there a solution? I mean, there's no blanket solution to the
pipeline
like, okay, so restorative justice is something that a lot of school districts are implementing now. Mm-hmm. Do you see this as like a possible way of repairing some of these issues?
So it has to be coupled with what I was just talking about, this cultural competency training, and really just like self-exploration and curiosity that you have to do in order to eliminate biases that you have, microaggressions that you have, mm-hmm. that you don't know that you have. They're internalized. Yeah, exactly. And and that's the thing about a microaggression, right? Is that it's every day, it's commonplace. And a lot of times you don't even know you're doing it.
It's so small, it just chips away.
Right. But they're hostile and and that's the thing is that's, you're never going to have a good relationship, whether it's in the workplace or with students or whatever, because you can do restorative justice with adults as well, unless both parties are doing the work. So I think I don't think it's ever going to work because it'll always be surface relationships unless you're saying, why did I punish that kid that way? Why did I have that reaction? Why did I let that escalate? What did I do as a part of the problem here? Because it's not always the kid. Like, that's the thing. Kids make mistakes and they do terrible things sometimes. Mm-hmm. But the escalation, that's usually the adult.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
You could bounce that back off of me. Do I think there's a solution?
Is there a solution?
Lord Jesus, help the white people. Okay. What would Donna Ford say?
Donna Ford would literally say, cultural competency training for whites.
I think also, I think something that where I'm working now, so I'm working at a nonprofit that works in education now, I think something that they've done really successfully in their hiring practices is A, they fill a position of color with a person of color, and B, they look really creatively at resumes, which I think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. So they don't hire people who, you look at their resume and they have this degree and this degree and this degree that like perfectly aligns with this position. They look at people and they say, this person has a degree in this field, but it may have the potential to bring some kind of, add something creative to this position.
Add value in a different way.
Yeah, so they're pulling from different pipelines.
That's cool.
Which is it. And it's been really successful, I think, so far, because they're bringing in new life, new blood, younger people, mm-hmm. and they're diversifying both with color and with gender, mm-hmm. and with age, which is really That's cool. Good. Yeah, but this is just like one area of where I work. All of the other areas are like old white people. So
yeah, I think what you said is a good point, and they're doing that a lot with like educator prep programs with admissions, mm-hmm. and it's like, look at disposition data, like look, like literally, like you can tell a lot from a conversation, right? But also like look at them differently instead of just as GPAs, mm-hmm. and undergraduate or high school, whatever.
Yeah, you have to be really creative.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all we have time for today. Yeah, but it's been great. Like, thanks for chatting with me.
Do it again.
Bye, guys.
Bye.